Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Each episode is a conversation with inspiring people who make wonderful contributions to our knowledge in these areas and spark curiosity and ideas to pursue. Join me, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
I sincerely believe that at the core of a successful, sustainable business are relationships and connection. And so the more we are farming out that connection, the further away we get from sustainability and profitability in our business. At the start of automation, people weren't bombarded the same way because it is becoming so saturated with this automation. You talk a lot about innovation and differentiation in your work. I think one of the ways people can really innovate and differentiate online is by being the person willing to have a human-to-human connection and go that extra step that isn't automated. And as business owners, I think there is still a lot of beauty and power in automating certain things. I just don't believe in automating that relationship piece.
Hi there, innovator. It's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. And I hope you enjoyed my recent conversations with Jason Van Orden, business and marketing strategist for Expert Influencers, and David Schreiner-Kahn of Smashing the Plateau. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Kim Arget Singer, a mindset coach and business mentor who helps heart-centered, passion-driven entrepreneurs, creatives, and coaches build, grow, and scale a business that they are wildly in love with and is also financially sustainable. Kim graduated from university with an honors degree in psychology and then went on to pursue an acting career in Hollywood. When the business of acting no longer inspired her, she moved to Manhattan to pursue her passion for coaching. She's obsessed with how our brains work, about business psychology and relationship-based marketing and heart-centered sales, as well as empowering others to their own version of success and zone of genius so that they can, in her words, take up space like a boss so that they can get paid. A quick promotional message from our sponsor, that's InnovaBiz, where we help coaches and consultants build professional credibility, engage their target audience, and connect with their ideal client. That requires absolute clarity about who your ideal clients are and how you can help them. To help you get that clarity about your ideal client, take a look at our Marketing Master Mini Class, where in less than 30 minutes, you'll gain absolute clarity on your ideal client and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. Access the Marketing Master Mini Class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free and accessible without even giving away your email. In our discussion today, Kim and I talked about how the core of any successful business is the relationships and connections that are built. We talked about changing our mindset around sales to be service-focused and heart-centered, and how we can become aware of some of our unconscious thoughts and change our behavior as a result. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Kim Arget Singer. Hi, I'm your host Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from New York in the USA, Kim Arget Singer, who's a mindset coach, a business mentor, and Kim has a mission to help you create your version of success and make money doing what you love doing. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Kim. It's a real privilege to have you as my guest.
It is such an honor to be here. I cannot wait for our conversation.
Rich Everett, who was our guest on episode 237 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we have a conversation with you, Kim. So a big hello to Rich.
Huge hello to Rich. I'm a big fan of his work.
And we had a great conversation with him too. Now, before we start talking about all things mindset and mission and success, I know you've had an acting career in Hollywood and then you kind of changed direction, moved to Manhattan and began a new career. So what prompted that change and why coaching?
You mean that isn't the normal segue in the way most people get into business? Part of my mission is finding our version of success. And I really believe we can all make money doing what we love. And for a long time, it was acting. And I woke up one day in LA loving the world of acting, but not the business of acting. It's very much a business, and realized I was becoming a jaded person, which is the opposite of loving what you do, and really set out to find what that next step for me was. Quit my job, you know, sold my car, got rid of my apartment, bought a one-way ticket to New York City because no better reason than it was calling to me and I needed to be outside of my environment to see the forest for the trees, so to say, and had a conversation with a coach along the way that really opened me up to the world of coaching. And they say the rest is history, but I have a background in psychology. I worked in marketing for a little bit, and really what happened is the dots just started connecting and I realized my background in psychology, learning coaching and the skills and tools of a coach, and then that marketing background with really what the business of acting is, really came together beautifully to support other people.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So you had a psychology background, and I know you're really fascinated by the brain and how it works and how we kind of use it in good ways and how we use it to sabotage ourselves in many ways as well. The dots did join up. And it's fascinating. I had a conversation with another guest on a podcast recently, Kathy Salet, around improv and how improv can help in business. And her take on that was you can write a different script and so you can get a different outcome. So that kind of speaks back to the acting part as well.
I love that improv, and we could geek out about that for a long time. So many ways that relates to business and really the industry of acting. Not just being an actress, but have your own business as an actor. There's so many parallels to running a business as a coach or being a small business owner.
Okay. So what is it specifically that you do and who do you work with?
Specifically, I help people to build, grow, and scale businesses that they love that also make them money. I think so often we think it has to be one or the other. We're passion driven and we get to have something we care about, or we get to make money doing something we don't care as much about. So I really help people bridge those two together, all about making money doing what we love. And my people are, I call them heart-centered, passion-driven, high-achieving entrepreneurs, creatives, and coaches. So a whole lot of heart and a whole lot of passion.
Yeah, of course, one of the risks, I mean, I know I'd like to work in with those people, but one of the risks there is that they do feel as though that's at odds with charging money for their services or their products or charging what they really are worth. And so they undervalue themselves often. So what are some of the things that get in our way when, you know, we have that servant's heart, that passion for what we're doing, that love for what we're doing, and we feel as though we can't charge more for the services or product we provide?
I think one of the things that you're speaking to absolutely comes up, and it really is feeling like it's okay and that it is of service to sell and to ask for money for the work we do. I think this is something that comes up for, I'd say, almost every one of my clients, especially as they're getting into the higher price points or they're starting to scale their business. I think there's a lot that comes up around visibility, but what I find happens is it's not so much visibility. I think a lot of people can get visible and show up, but it's very different to show up and be visible in a way where you're, I call it taking up space, but really owning what you bring to the table, really owning the value you have, really standing in your work and essentially bragging to it in a way that allows people to understand how you can serve them and help them. And those are two very common things I see come up for clients. And then there can tend to be a lot around receiving money and keeping money and just parts of the sales process. I see a sales process as something that is not just the conversation itself, but beginning, middle, and end. And so a lot of times that middle end part of the sales process, there can be some ways we want to pull back and we start getting in our head thinking we're not good enough or we're being pushy or slimy or icky. Does that all make sense?
So, well, let's step back. one step before, I'd love to explore that sales bit, but I'll come back to that. I'd like to talk about mindset in general, and what are some of the things that, you know, typically a business owner like myself finds challenging in terms of mindset, particularly like I've got something that I know really well, I love doing, I'm passionate about it, I know it would help other people, and yet it's just not coming together. So what are some of the mindset shifts that I need to be thinking about tackling?
I'm trying to think of how to answer this in a way that's succinct because it becomes such a large question. But, and so there's a lot of stuff that can come up with mindset. But what I found for most of us is most of us have one or two core, I don't really love the word blocks, but one or two core things that tend to come up for us over and over again in life. It's usually some sort of story or construct our brain has created, often at a young age, to make sense of the world and to survive. And it tends to play out in multiple areas of our life. So even if you're not in business, you'll find this will play out in your relationships or in your day job or in the way you communicate with people at the grocery store. And when we can start to uncover what that is, we can see how this affects the way we show up. And so often as business owners, we're still humans. We're humans selling to other humans. Whatever these mindset constructs are, the parts of our mindset that tend to hold us back and not serve us will be similar in different parts of our life. And so if we can figure out what those are, what's nice about our mindset, our brain's actually pretty simple, is then we can start to just address those one or two things and start to rewire our brain and change our patterns of thinking so that we're showing up differently. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. I guess the one thing that I'm curious about, and it's always fascinating to me, is that mostly these blocks are unconscious. I mean, you're not conscious that you have a pattern that is getting in the way of having greater success, let's say. So how do you... what kind of steps can you recommend to take to become more aware or bring some of those patterns, even the good patterns that you're running semi-automatically? How do you bring those more into consciousness so that you can run them, well, with intent, let's say?
It's going to make a joke and say hire a coach. But I'm not even kidding. But what you're saying is absolutely true. I joke with my clients sometimes. They'll get frustrated when we uncover something. I'm like, well, you know, basically a seven-year-old's running your business. This is something you learned when you were seven. Give yourself a break. Mm-hmm. And now that we've identified, I mean, the great thing is awareness is always the first step. Once we start to create awareness around something, we can start to take those patterns that we have usually unconsciously learned that are in our subconscious, create awareness around them, and then we can consciously start to pay attention to and reprogram and relearn a new way of thinking. And so a lot of it is taking the time in the coaching world, the coaching lingo is being the observer of our thoughts, but starting to pay attention to what are the thoughts I'm having and realizing these thoughts aren't even me. These are just, it's almost like creating a little separation and starting to see them as separate from us. And that's how we can start to also choose new thoughts. Careful not to share too much here because I can get long-winded, but I think about it sometimes like having two sheets of paper. For most of us, and if we think about the stories that are running subconsciously, for most of us, we have two sheets of paper, thoughts and feelings, and they're kind of fused and stuck together. And what we want to do is start to create some awareness. So there's almost like this little separation between those two sheets of paper, and we can start to see them as separate. Once we've created that separation, it's so much easier to start to consciously choose a new thought and then redirect our emotions and actions.
Yeah.
And it's easier when you're working with someone to help you, you know, pull these things
out. That's right. I think, that's very clear. I mean, what you're talking about there is almost going external and becoming an observer of your own behavior, which obviously is a lot easier when you actually engage somebody else to give you that input who is observing your behavior.
Absolutely. But just as a practice, I mean, it can be helpful just have one day and just start to notice what are the thoughts I'm having and just even labeling them as I'm thinking the thought that I notice I'm having the thought that. And so while you're, it just helps create some of that separation and you get to start to notice your thoughts by simply even labeling. I'm noticing I'm having the thought that I'm annoyed right now. I'm noticing I'm having the thought that I really don't want to post something online right now. I'm noticing I'm having the thought that reaching out and making an offer feels really scary. And so it just helps you to start to create some awareness that this is the thought I'm having and I'm noticing I'm having that thought, meaning I can actually see it and observe it. Does that maybe make a little more sense?
Yeah. I think you raised one other thing there that I think is quite insightful. I certainly find it insightful. And that's, you know, if you're having a feeling around something, let's say you want to make an offer to somebody and you've got a feeling, I'm a bit afraid of doing this, or I'm hesitant, or you procrastinate, or you find distraction strategies so that you keep putting that off, to think about, well, what's the feeling that's coming up for me? So is it fear, a fear of rejection? Is it a fear of failure? Because, you know, if the person says, yes, I'll pay you this large sum of money for your service or product, that I'm afraid that it won't be good enough, or that they won't be happy with the service or product. So to think about the fear in terms of what's actually coming up there, I think I find certainly that helps me a lot.
Absolutely. And I think just to piggyback on that, what can be helpful then, once you've identified that feeling, you can see what's the thought behind the feeling, because thought always precedes a feeling. And so then we can really start to play with, oh, what might be a more empowering thought here? Because that feeling is always going to be first caused by a thought. You and I can have the same situation and feel two different things because of our thought patterns. And that's where it gets really fun.
Yeah. And of course, we've been practicing some presentations the other day, and we've been talking about the amount of information that we're all subjected to and the amount that we actually take in. And if I remember the numbers correctly, it's over 2 million bits per second, according to Mihai Macischi-Hai. And the mind has a bandwidth of about 134 bits per second, which is much smaller, and even that is still overwhelm, because that's a lot of information. So we kind of box it into 7 plus or minus chunks. If we're on top of our game, it might be 9 chunks. If we're feeling tired and drained, it might be 5. So that you and I in the same environment and seeing the same thing in front of us come up with the same 5 blocks or pictures that we then make mean something out of those 2 million bits of information every second is highly unlikely. So we wonder why people have different views about things.
And this is exactly why mindset is the biggest factor in our business. It's what you're speaking to. If persistent thought in your brain is, I'm not good enough, or I can't do this, then when you have all of these bits of information coming and you've literally programmed your brain to pay attention for evidence of, I'm not good enough, I can't do this. So, and if you think, I'm so good at this, I can do this, you can be in the same room and notice that person that you can help. And so what you're sharing, to make me geek out, because it's exactly why this, you know, makes so much sense for business owners.
So what kind of process do you go through with business owners to look at those mindset blocks? And I will come back to the sales bit, because I think that's where, for a lot of businesses, and certainly for me too, it kind of plays itself out all the time.
I love sales, so we can definitely talk about that some more. The process I work or walk clients through, I work one-on-one with clients, so I'm very much in meeting people where they're at. So with all of my clients, it honestly looks very different, but I frame it as clarity, mindset, strategy, and action, meaning we're taking a look at the clarity of their business model, what they want, where they're going. We're spending a lot of time on mindset and how that is either sabotaging or supporting their business, and, you know, where that comes into play. We're absolutely taking a look at the strategy, because we're running businesses and that's how we build, grow, and scale profitable businesses. And then we're taking a look at the action, because all of this is useless if we're not implementing our strategy. And then I joke that my unspoken part of my framework is feedback, because I think so much of my work is also not just feedback on a coaching call, but I spend a lot of time with clients in between calls, reviewing their content, reviewing their copy, giving feedback on, it's the same thing, the blind spots we can't see in our work, so that they're able to elevate it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a really good high level framework. And I think it is important, as you say, that it's got to translate into action. And the feedback part is really good from the point of view of knowing what's working and changing direction if needed. So let's go into the sales area. So why do you think people kind of have that inability to convert those sales. So they're clear about their target market, they're clear about their offering, they've got a great service, they've figured out a pricing, which I guess that's already where, you know, when I think of myself, where I struggle a little bit, and often I put a number down, I think, oh, can I charge that much? But then the next step, of course, also is then having a conversation with somebody who is an ideal client, but you just, I just then struggle a little bit to make the sale.
I think there's a few things, but I think just to what you're speaking to here is such a great example of how mindset plays a role in the sales process. If when we're having a sales conversation, we have to be the most confident person in the room. People are coming to us because they want our help. They want our support. They need to trust us that we can guide them to have whatever that result is they're desiring. When we're not feeling confident in our pricing or in our work or in our ability to help someone, because we're human and the human brain kicks up all the things of, am I good enough? Who am I to do this? You know, so-and-so is doing better online, whatever the stories are that come up. When we then, without realizing, subconsciously are pulling back in the sales conversation or sales process, people are smart. They pick up on those nonverbal cues. They pick up on that hesitation, and it breaks down the trust in the sales process and the sales conversation, which I think is just such a huge component that, you know, having someone feel heard and understood and trusting that we can help them. So I think that's a big part of it. I also think sales has a really bad rap in our society. It's been labeled as, you know, the used car salesman. It's slimy. It's icky. Yeah, yeah. You know, good people don't make money. They don't ask for money. And so I think there's also just a lot of societal stories that many of us have picked up. I'm a female. Many females have, you know, heard stories about we're supposed to be caretakers. And I think there's a lot that can come up around that. And then sales is a skill. Not all of us have learned, you know, it's like anything else in business. Sometimes it's also just the practice of learning what that skill is and how to do it in a way. I call it heart-centered sales, how to do it in a way that is heart-centered and of service and not that yucky, icky, pushy used car salesman. So I kind of just threw a mouthful at you, so I'll let you pull that apart.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, one of the things, because I think, you know, you mentioned sales as a skill, and certainly I think it is, but I think we all do sales at some point, whether we're, you know, whether we're selling our own product or service, or whether it's, you know, I have this wonderful idea, I want my friends to come on board and join me. Let's say it's a weekend away somewhere for a fun weekend with my friends. And if I come up with the idea, then I have to sell that to my friends before they say, yeah, that's a great idea, we're in. So, and if you take that sort of example, I bet most people are really good at doing that sale. And yet, if you translate it over to, okay, I have a product or service, it's going to help you, Kim, but there I'm really not good at making the sale.
110%. Everyone can't see me. I'm nodding my head very, very adamantly over here. I don't know if you've read Daniel Pink's To Sell as Human, but he talks a lot about this. It is human to sell, that we sell each other on ideas all the time. We sell each, you know, I sell my boyfriend going to a movie that I want to see with me. I think what happens for us as business owners, and what I found, you know, I worked in advertising for a little bit before having my own business. I worked as a bartender for a little while, which is all sales. It's very different, I find, for many people to sell someone else's idea or product or service than it is to sell our own work. And I think that's where some of the mindset really gets kicked up in terms of, okay, now I have to put a price tag on my own work. And I think we confuse that with our own value. And I think that's where some of the mindset stuff can get kicked up. And I think then that's where having a strategy, I say that sometimes strategy supports mindset, having some of those skills and strategy, it makes us feel more safe, not because we don't know how to do it, but because we have, again, it's just a framework. It's like training wheels that can make us feel a little safer in the steps to move forward to sell our own work. Does that make a little more sense?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's really about understanding the strategy that you might use. And everybody's got different styles, of course, to sell an idea to their friends. But understanding, you know, what are the strategic steps that you go through there, and how can you build that framework into a business sale?
Absolutely. And I think with that, I mean, that's the beauty of the work we do. There's so much psychology in sales. It is such a human skill. And I think that's where having a little strategy and knowing things like, as humans, we're wired to avoid pain and we're wired to seek pleasure. As humans, we are, you know, the more we can make a decision for ourselves and the more we're likely to say yes. As humans, our brain actually shuts down and goes into fight or flight when we feel like we're being sold to. I think knowing some of these things can help us to show up in conversations in a heart-centered way that is also more strategic.
Yeah. All right. So the one of the things you mentioned a little bit earlier was the concept of hiding in plain sight and visibility. So talk to us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, hiding in plain sight, I don't think I coined this term, but I use it a lot. And I think there's such a difference between, I think we all know visibility in business is important, showing up and being seen. That's, you know, the beginning of marketing or even our sales process. And what I find for so many of us is we've got the visibility thing down. We know, show up online, do a podcast, post something online, you know, maybe write a blog. And then I see we're hiding in plain sight, meaning we're showing up, but we're pulling back. We're not sharing our true ideas. Maybe we're not communicating to the people we really want to work with. Maybe we're not making an offer and selling. Maybe we're not being bold in our opinions. Maybe we're, you know, kind of sugarcoating our thoughts because we're worried someone's going to not like them or we're going to repel people. And so hiding in plain sight is just how I phrase this way we show up, but we're not really showing up and taking up space fully and really owning our work and our value and our presence and our energy when we're showing up through our, whether it's our content or in a sales conversation even.
So by that, do you mean, let's say, taking an opinion that may be a little bit outside the mainstream or being vulnerable to, because I guess one of the things about online is it's very easy for people to then be critical in, not in a constructive way, but just making comments that may be hurtful because it's very anonymous online. So is that what you mean by kind of not showing up fully?
Yeah, I mean it to encompass many actions. So I think it can happen. I think we can hide in plain sight in many ways, but that is absolutely one way. I shared something that was not loved by everyone not too long ago. Had I watered that down and sort of shared the concept and not really shared what I truly believed, that would have been hiding in plain sight. I would have still shown up. I would have still been visible, but I would have been watering down my message. Something I see that happens with clients a lot, a way they hide in plain sight is they are making offers or they are selling to people that feel really safe, like safe ideal clients, or they're making safe offers versus the people they really and truly want to work with or the offer they really and truly want to sell. And so that's another way they might hide in plain sight. They're still showing up, they're still selling, but they're not really fully owning, you know, who that is they want to work with or what that is they want to sell.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, and then the there might be a slight mismatch in between what they think that they or what they believe that their product or service is worth and who they're actually selling it to. Because if that audience that they're selling to is the safe audience, then I'm guessing they're probably not the ones that really value the offer highly.
Yeah, or there's even that mismatch in terms of fit and I talk about loving the work you do. If you're going the safe route and you're kind of hiding, it's very similar to dating. If there's someone you really have a crush on, you're like, I'm not good enough. They're not going to like me. And so sounds horrible, but I'm going to go out with this person who feels safe because I know they like me. You're still showing up and dating, but you're not dating the person that feels like more of a match for you. Silly example.
Yeah. So it comes back a little bit to the imposter syndrome, doesn't it? The feeling of not being good enough there for the ideal date, if you like, or for the ideal client that you really want to work with.
It's always mindset. always mindset.
Okay. Now, you mentioned something a moment ago in our sales conversation, and you know, I relate to this very well. I mean, the used car salesman, the stereotype there, are you wandering through the lot and you're just having a browse and the used car salesman comes up and says, oh, this car, you've got to buy this car and really tries to convince you where you're actually not the least bit interested in that car, but for some reason it's just caught your glance. So it's kind of not that human connection. When you mentioned that human connection that we actually have our human needs when we're going into a sale or we're wanting to buy. So one of the things that I'm really passionate about, and particularly in marketing and sales online, is that we have all these automated systems now that we can use. There's a whole lot of tools and artificial intelligence even around that can do various things. And I think a lot of the human part gets lost there. I mean, just a simple example, you know, I'm sure you get bombarded by emails like I do, trying to sell you things that you probably don't need and you probably never even signed up for or looked at. And what's your view on moving away from that as a business owner and taking on board some of those tools, but at the same time, really keeping that human element front and center?
I have so many thoughts here. I'm trying to think of where I want to start. I think to speak to the human connection and interaction and the automation piece first, I sincerely believe that at the core of a successful, sustainable business are relationships and connection. And so the more we are farming out that connection, the further away we get from sustainability and profitability in our business. At the start of automation, people weren't bombarded the same way because it is becoming so saturated with this automation. You talk a lot about innovation and differentiation in your work. I think one of the ways people can really innovate and differentiate online is by being the person willing to have a human-to-human connection and go that extra step that isn't automated. And as business owners, I think there is still a lot of beauty and power in automating certain things. I just don't believe in automating that relationship piece. And then I think to what you were saying, just in terms of the sales part, what I always remind my clients is it's usually not the action that is the problem. It's the intention behind the action. So when we're getting bombarded by these copy and paste automated emails, that feels like the yucky used car salesperson because we didn't ask for that invitation. Yeah. It's nothing we're interested in. We don't want that email. I didn't reach out to you for that. That feels like an invasion to me. When it's something I've actively asked for, or it makes sense, or you're doing the same exact action in a way that's thoughtful or building a relationship first, same action doesn't feel yucky or icky on the receiving end. I always tell people my second VA I hired, she reached out to me by a cold email, but she did it in a way that was very human and connection-based, and it wasn't automated, and I hired her. And so same action, but different intention. And so I think that's just something we can all remember. It's not that the overall concept or strategy is bad. It's more how we're applying that strategy or the automation.
Yeah, and part of that intention, and I'm just making an assumption here with your example of the VA, part of that intention, I think, is actually looking and doing some research on who is the person that, or who are one or two people that I can actually talk to that, you know, I want to work with or I want to help if you're selling. And how can I reach out to them in that human way? So what can I find out about them that I can speak to so that we start off with some common ground for a conversation that can start that relationship?
Absolutely. And just to use her as an example, she realized a real need I had and spoke to that in a way that was very service oriented, very much had done her research, very much helping me solve a pain point or a problem. Versus sometimes I get emails, I'm sure you do too, where I'm like, have you even looked at my website? This does not even make sense. I live in New York City. I don't even own a car. Why are you offering me something for my car? Or, you know, whatever the offer is. And so I think exactly to what you're saying, it's taking that time to be thoughtful and to really speak to the problem you can help someone with.
Yeah, a couple of my favorites are the ones that come through on email. We saw your website, really good job. I love the content. And we noticed you're not number one on Google, and we're an SEO company, and we will get you to number one. And I'm thinking, well, A, do you even know what I want to rank for? Because, you know, I can be number one for some obscure term, and that's of no value to me at all. But if you actually take a look at the terms that I do rank on page one for, you'll find that I do, and they're the ones I want to rank for. So it's kind of, you know, they haven't done any research at all. And then the other one is, oh, we've written this wonderful article that I think we love. Yeah, they always start off the same way. We love your blog, you know, great articles there, and we've written this wonderful article, and we wonder if you'd like to link to it or you'd like to use it as a guest post. And then you look at the article and it's kind of totally off topic, like health supplements or car parts or whatever it might be, which has nothing to do with my website at all.
I get that one a lot. It always cracks me up. And I'm like, I want to help me help you. I can't even help you here because this doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Okay. Now, one of the things that I think you talk about in a couple of your blog posts, and it kind of came up as a little bit of a theme here in terms of helping people and this relationship thing. And what you talk about is doing less and being better at doing that less. So the idea of focus. So talk to us a little bit about your philosophy and approach there.
Yeah. Thank you for asking this question, because I think it's misunderstood. I think when we hear doing less, we think that means don't work, don't show up, go have the business on the beach with the laptop, like sipping Mai Tais. I show up to my business every day. I love my work. I want to show up. So it's not about not working, but it's about doing less of the activities that don't move your business forward. The busy work we tend to fall into, especially when we're feeling insecure or fearful. It's very easy to get busy and sabotage our forward movement by doing all of these different things instead of the very few things that usually will move our business forward. The 80-20 principle definitely applies here. Most of our 80% of our results tend to come from 20% of our effort. And so a lot of what I support my clients with is getting rid of all those distractions, not doing all the busy work, getting really clear and focused on what are their core offers, what are the few marketing tasks they need to do to actually generate money to move their business forward, and really keeping those distractions on the back burner. And that way we're doing less and better, because we're doing it over and over again to get more results. And so I want to be mindful there. It does not mean not doing any work, but it starts to feel like less work, because when you're focused on fewer things and you get more results, you become well-oiled at those tasks. And so that starts to feel easier. And then it starts, this is when people are saying, business is so easy. It's because they've gotten really clear and focused on those few tasks they need to do.
Yeah, yeah, that's great advice. And also it opens up opportunities to dig deeper into those smaller areas of focus, which gives you a lot of leverage and makes you unique, I think. If you take that 80-20 principle, and I can't remember who this originated from, but it was Alan Dibb from the One Page Marketing Plan that told me about it. If you take the 80-20 and take 80-20 on top of that, then it comes out to 4% of the work you do actually gives you 64% of the results. So, you know, you can narrow that focus even more. And you imagine if that 64% of the results you get, you can really magnify that and grow that spectacularly, then that is really intense focus.
Oh my gosh, I love that so much. I'm borrowing this, and that makes my brain so happy. But it's exactly that. And that's what scaling a business is all about. I think we think scaling a business, or we can think in the online space, that it's, I got to do more things to make more money. It's really, how do you make more money by not doing anything more or doing even more focused work of what you're doing? You're scaling more income, not more work. And I love kind of squaring the 80-20 or doubling the 80-20 principle, because that says it perfectly.
Hmm. All right. Well, this has been fascinating, Kim. I really appreciate you sharing several of your insights into how you work and the mindset. I mean, as you say, we could talk about mindset for ages. It's one of my favorite topics too. And it's always something that fascinates me, but I always see that, you know, I set myself a whole lot of challenges in mindset, and then I see other people doing the same. So I think it's really a great service that you provide to help people see those things that might be getting in their way and help them navigate through them. So it's a good time, I think, to move on to the innovation round, which is, we call a buzz. It's designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field, with some tips from your experience. So I've got 5 questions, and hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers and inspire the listener to go and do something awesome today as a result.
No pressure at all.
Okay, so what do you think the number one thing is anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
I'm going to say two things because I have a hard time with one. I think one thing is to take some time looking outside your industry. I think we get so myopic in our fields, and what I see so often, innovation comes from people, you know, thinking outside the box, and that comes from living a life and seeing things in other industries and in other parts of the world, and just seeing how those pieces can then apply and fit into your business or into your work, and how you can take, you know, something from, I don't know, I'm looking out in the country here, from farming, and apply it to the online business. You know, how can you bring that in? And then with that, really and truly creating, what is it, Cal Newport talks about deep work, that space to actually think, that white space, that time to, I try to block this out every week, where you're not creating content or you're not working with clients or you're not, you know, on the hamster wheel, and you're really just spending time to think and ask yourself really good questions.
Yeah, I love that. I really like the idea of going outside your industry and going, you know, going and doing some totally different things, which sort of stretches you outside your comfort zone. But as you say, it often brings up ideas. And then if you do the deep work part, to work on those ideas and try to apply them in your area. I think there's so many inventions that actually came from people doing that.
I think so. I have a friend who's an inventor, and I think that's where she gets a lot of her ideas. And I know even a lot of my content, it comes from outside of business and life, and I'll be sitting in an Uber and it will spark an idea for business, or I'll be going on a run in the country and something there will spark an idea. And so I think that's the beauty of stepping outside our general routine or space.
Okay. Well, on that, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Running. It sounds so silly, but going for my run, the majority of my content is, this sounds awful, but I run on a treadmill. I live in New York City, so I run on a treadmill a lot, and you can usually find me running. And then about a quarter of a mile in, my phone is out and I'm trying to run and type notes in the notes section, because the majority of my ideas come to me when I'm running. But this is something for everyone here who's creative. This is, it's called, oh gosh, Adam Grant talks about this in The Originals. It's called the incubation period. If you have something you're working on, our brain hates open questions and open loops. So if you kind of leave your brain with a question or an open loop, and then you go do something else, like go for a run or go for a walk or wash the dishes, your subconscious mind continues to work on this and tries to solve it for you. And then because you're doing something a little more mindless, it will kind of spit the answer out to you, which is why we get, most of us probably get ideas in the shower. It's kind of that same idea. So I say running, joking, and also very intentionally, halfway through a blog post, I'll hit pause and I'll go for a run so that I can get the rest of what I need for that blog post.
Yeah, that's great advice. I go for a morning bike ride, and often when I'm on my own and not having conversations with others, all of a sudden there'll be ideas coming up. But I don't whip out the phone to write it down. So I've got to figure out a way to remember things, because I've been on rides where I've had about five or six ideas. And if I'm out for an hour, I've got to try to remember the five or six points to write down when I get back.
Yeah, I guess typing while you're riding, would it make sense? Can you do a voice memo to yourself or dictate? I know.
I probably could, although I've got the phones in the back pocket, so it might be a bit hard. So maybe I have to figure out a way to mount the phone on the handlebars or something, because then I could just ask Google to record it. All right. Now, what's a favorite resource that you use a lot?
Favorite resource that I use a lot. Resource, would you extrapolate on this question for me, please?
Well, it's a pretty open question. It could be technology. It could be, I mean, some people have said my mind. It could be anything, really.
Got it. Well, definitely my mind, but that almost seems like cheating since we've been talking about mindset all day long. One, this is a very practical tool that anyone can use, but I'm obsessed with Basecamp. I don't get an affiliate or anything from them, but it's what I use with my clients between our coaching calls. And I have found it has really allowed us to deepen our work, having that space to continue to communicate between calls and to work on things in real time and to have that feedback we were talking about. And I honestly, Basecamp, if you're listening, you should give me some money, because I send so many people to you. I think it's a really, really great tool.
Yeah, All right. So Basecamp's a project management tool,
but it also allows you to
have the communication inside it and store documents and resources and so on. So, yeah.
Yeah, you can track to-dos. You can have a chat, kind of like a messenger. You can upload documents. You can review documents. It's great.
Okay. And we'll post a link to that in the show notes. And do you have an affiliate?
No, I don't get any money from them. I just really think it's a great tool.
All right. Well, Basecamp, if you're listening. All right. So what's the best way to keep a client on track?
I feel like this is a trick question because my belief is my role personally as a coach is to empower my clients to stand in their role as a CEO and to show up as the CEO for their business. And so I'm very big on helping coach them to hold themselves accountable and to follow up for themselves. And so I'll absolutely check in with clients. So I say it's a little bit of a trick question. It's really the coaching process and the mindset work to help them hold themselves accountable and show up for themselves.
Hmm. All right. Well, that's good. And I guess we could ask how you do that, but that might be giving away some of your secrets.
No, there's no secrets here. I'm an open book. I think, you know, some of it is if someone isn't showing up, this is something I learned from my coach is always saying what I think on a call. And so if we're talking about, we'll use content as a simple example and someone not following through with their content plan, really getting clear on why aren't you showing up? What's going on? What's the reason? Like, because it's always mindset, you know, what's the reason you're not following through? What's the reason you're getting in your own way here? Here are all the excuses. What's underneath that excuse so that we're actually solving the right problem? Because I think it's so easy. What we usually think is like, I need more accountability, or I need another planning software, or I need another content strategy. And that's rarely it. Usually it's, I'm scared. I think I'm not good enough. I'm worried people are going to hate me. I'm worried my best friend from high school's mom is going to see this and think I've gone off the deep end. And getting really clear on those things so we're solving the right thing so that they then can show up for themselves.
Hmm. All right. Well, that's helped clarify that a lot more. So thanks for that. Now, what's the number one thing you think anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Own their opinions. I think it's kind of what we were talking about earlier, not hiding in plain sight and taking up space. The more you can own what you truly believe and own it 110%, the more you're going to own your little piece of the online world or your little piece of the off online world, the more we're consuming other people's content and regurgitating other people's ideas, the more you're just adding to the noise. And so I think that's one of the biggest ways anyone can differentiate and really start to innovate.
Hmm. Yeah, that's really wonderful advice. So, and I think not only owning your own ideas, but as you were saying earlier, having the courage then to actually post those or promote those in whatever way you're putting yourself out there.
Mm-hmm. Shout it from the rooftops, which I, as someone who's had to do a lot of work to be able to do that, I understand that is easier said than done. And that's usually quite a lot of mindset work to step into. But I think that is a way you can differentiate.
Hmm.
But no shame in that game. If, you know, it's taking you a little bit of time to get there, that's okay.
Okay. Well, thanks, Kim. This has been really great. Now, where can people learn more about you and maybe even get in touch to say thank you?
Thank you for having me. I've loved this conversation. And everything's over on my website, which is my name, kimargetsinger.com. It's a long one, so hopefully we'll have a link in there. And then I have Instagram is my name, Kim Argetsinger. I share a lot of free content and videos there. And then I also have a Facebook group, Business Besties and Creative Bosses. We have lots of free trainings. We have a monthly free training as well as weekly lives. So would love to connect with anyone in any of those spaces.
Okay. And we will have links to all of those spaces in the show notes, as Kim suggested. Now, do you have a parting piece of advice you'd like to leave the listener with today, particularly in, you know, their aspirations to be a leader in innovation and in their field?
I have lots of thoughts. I'm trying to think of what I usually say, because I mean this so sincerely, and I think this applies to leadership. I think it applies to entrepreneurialism. I think it applies to us in our personal lives, is that reminder that everyone is so much more capable than they give themselves credit for. Usually we are our own biggest stumbling block, and we are the thing that is keeping us from getting where we want to go. The leaders you look up to, the thought leaders you admire, the entrepreneurs you admire are no different than you. They've just taken a few more steps to move through the discomfort, to show up for themselves and to show up for the work they believe in. And you are just as capable. So if anything, take a look at them and use that as evidence that you're capable and so much more than you think you are.
Hmm. Yeah, of course, that brings up the thought in my mind, and I can't recall who said this, but that our greatest fear is actually not that we're not good enough, but our greatest fear is actually that we're powerful beyond our wildest imagination.
I think it was Marianne Williamson who said something like that, and I will tell you, I think that is so true. As I've had more success, I have found there's a whole bunch of fear that comes up around that, and I see it with clients as well, and I think it's so true. So often we're scared of, oh, what happens if I actually step into this?
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing. Actually, I have one more question before I wrap it up, and that's, who would you like me to have a conversation with on a future Innova Buzz podcast, and why?
Oh, I'm going to have to think on this one, because I have like five names, and I want to think of who the right person is.
All right. Well, we'll circle back with you.
I have a name, but I want to make sure it's okay for me to share her name. But I have a really good name for you, who's all about innovation.
All right. Great. Well, we'll come back to you on that one. So thanks so much, Kim, for sharing your time and your insights with us today. I've really enjoyed this conversation. I love geeking out about mindset and how that impacts on all the things we do. And as you pointed out, it's not just in business life. It's kind of it shows up across all areas of life, and where there's an issue coming up, it's always a good question to ask. And you brought this up very early on, is where else is that showing up? Because I think that is a really powerful question and kind of helps move some of those blocks. So I've really enjoyed this immensely today. And let's keep in touch.
I would love to keep in touch. Thank you for having me. Thanks for having this space so that we can geek out and the amazing work you do for your audience. It's wonderful.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed that engaging and informative conversation with Kim and took something away from her episode. I really like Kim's approach to changing our mindset around sales so that we do sales from a heart-centered and service-focused approach. I'd love to know what you took away from Kim's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/KimArgetSinger. That is KimArgetSinger. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/KimArgetSinger. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Kim there, as well as links to her website, her social media pages, and the other resources we spoke about in today's conversation. Kim suggested that we have a conversation with marketing strategist Kelly Flynn on a future Innova Buzz podcast episode. So Kelly, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the Innova Buzz podcast, courtesy of Kim Argett-Singer. Remember to check out our Marketing Master mini class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free and accessible without even giving away your email. But most importantly, it will enable you in less than 30 minutes to gain absolute clarity about who your ideal client is and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. And if you'd like our help to go even deeper into marketing mastery, or our help with producing your very own podcast, even launching your very own podcast if you don't yet have one, then send me an email to jurgen@innovabiz.co and we can set up a quick call to have a short conversation and find out whether we're a good fit for one another. Tune in again to the next episodes of the Innova Buzz podcast, where we've got more fantastic guests lined up, including Chris Yankulovsky of Remote Staff and J. Scott Christiansen, expert about all things artificial intelligence. Stay connected with us by subscribing to the InnovaBuzz podcast at innovabuzz.com/subscribe. InnovaBuzz.com/subscribe. Make sure you never miss another episode. It would also mean a lot to me if you leave us a review, because what you think matters. I'd love to hear your thoughts, your ideas, your suggestions, or questions you have, so go ahead and share them in the comments below the blog post for this episode. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.